excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it. On the road again.
If we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving.
Welcome to this Oregon State edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you on the way home from the Oregon State game on November 7th. Well, I didn't think there was a way for me to be more disgusted with the Bears' performance after the two back-to-back blowout losses to Oregon and USC, but the Bears managed to find a way to tick me off that much more. Quick recap, Bears got the opening kickoff and proceeded to do absolutely nothing, and then handed the ball over to Oregon State, who won. Two successive drives went down the field with remarkable ease to go up 14-0. The Bears then finally clawed back into it, forcing a couple of Oregon State punts, and then finally putting together a touchdown drive, which was capped by an impressive best run that sent him flying into the air and unfortunately coming down on his head, giving him what I understand is a concussion, but left him on the turf for on the order of 10 to 15 minutes while the medical staff tried to revive him. And pretty much from there, the Cal offense disappeared. Oregon State was able to put up a third touchdown before halftime for a 21-7 halftime lead. In the third quarter, OSU received the kickoff and drove most of the way down the field before Cal intercepted the ball and got a very unlucky break in that Catoos fell 1 yard outside the end zone instead of into the end zone on his interception. The result was, instead of getting the ball at the 20, the Bears were forced to try to get the ball out of the end zone without incurring a safety. And while they did manage to avoid that, the desperation of the moment had Riley throw a interception, pretty much putting Oregon State's drive back on track, and they kicked the field goal to go up 24-7. And that was basically all the scoring for the day until late in the game when Oregon State drove the length of the field in what can essentially be considered garbage time to go up 31-7 before the Bears answered with their own garbage time touchdown to reach the final score of 14-31. First, I'll talk about the difficulties that the Bears faced. Oregon State does run an impressive defensive scheme. Their press coverage defense is pretty darn good, and their defensive line and linebackers always manage to get pretty good pressure. And they really aren't going to let you beat them with dinks and dunks, and they're really not going to give you the time to extend further down the field. So they're a very difficult team to beat defensively, and they showed that again today. But I still feel like their defense took a step back from last year after having watched them. But the system is still very good. On offense, Canfield has come a long way from last year, and he was exceptional today and really was the difference in getting the Beavers their offensive production. The Rogers brothers, while very good, really weren't the key to the offense. It was Canfield's ability to pick apart the zone coverages and put some pretty pinpoint passes in some pretty pinpoint places. And it was really the difference that gave the Beavers this win. Otherwise, it might have been a very low-scoring affair, and one really has no idea how it would have gone. But what leaves me so frustrated is it feels like the Bears didn't know what to expect. Oregon State's defensive philosophy hasn't changed in years. It's how they beat us in 2007, it's how they beat us in 2008, and it's how they beat us again in 2009. And for some reason, the Bear offense looks surprised that that's how they beat us again this year. The game plan was horrible, just like the game plan was horrible against Oregon, and to a lesser degree USC. Even as the game wore on, these swing-out passes just aren't going to work when the corners and the safeties are using press coverage. They're going to be there too quickly for the swing-out receiver to turn around and be able to evade them. And then what I notice happening with Riley, who had a very underwhelming performance today, is that when he seems to realize that the game plan is not working, that's when he really starts to struggle. He started out okay, he wasn't on fire, but as the game wore on and you could tell, he could see how ineffective the game plan was, that's when he really started to fall apart, making things even worse. So he seems like somebody who really needs to believe in his offense before he can compete. And unfortunately, since he's the one who needs to inject that belief into the offense, it really makes a difficult situation once things get spiraling downward. Then on the other side of the ball, I'm getting this feeling like Cal's zones are becoming pretty predictable to the opposition. Oregon State knew exactly what to do to expose that zone scheme. They knew exactly where to run routes so that they could isolate receivers the way they wanted to and create the situations they wanted to. I get the feeling that it's just too predictable. And with a mediocre to weak team, I don't know that it matters because the fundamentals of it are reasonably sound. But it's predictable enough and has enough weaknesses when we don't have a talent advantage that it's pretty easy to pick apart for a good quarterback and a good offensive coordinator who can create plays and create schemes that will manipulate the zone coverages the way they want to. So the big thing they were doing today was creating an environment where they could bring in the corner and then have the receiver running an out, and the corner would end up being behind the play for a very easy completion for Canfield. They ran that over and over and over again. The other thing that was working really well was when they would have the quarterback roll out, give a dump-off pattern, and set up a blocking scheme where the receiver could turn up field for 10 to 15 yards. It just seemed again and again and again that they knew how to beat the zone, and there was nothing the Bears could do to adjust to say, we're going to run a different type of zone. Because that really was the difference. The Rodgers brothers didn't really burn them. The sweeps and stuff that they're known for weren't very effective. In fact, the Bears did a great job of bottling those up. Quiz did not have that great of a day rushing between the tackles. It was really Canfield's ability to get the ball out to the receivers that won the day for them. And it just felt so predictable. And that's what really troubles me on that side of the ball. So we've got an offensive game plan that doesn't take into account the predictable Oregon State defense. We've got a defensive game plan that's predictable enough that Oregon State can scheme around it. And then we've got a Cal offensive line that just stinks. There's no other way around this block. Coverage is collapsing left and right. They just don't seem to have it. They can't run block. They can't pass protect. They're getting false start penalties. Nothing they seem to be doing is working against any defensive line. And remember that the Oregon State defensive line was supposed to be their weak point, but it didn't seem to matter. They were in the backfield constantly. They were disrupting the run play of Cal both before and after Best went out. This offensive line is the crutch that keeps breaking for this team. And so I leave this game extremely disappointed and very pessimistic about the rest of the Bears season at this point, with perhaps the lone exception of Washington. The Bears just beat, admittedly two of them were on the road, but they just beat what is likely the three worst teams in the conference in Washington State, UCLA, and Arizona State in that order. And so now they've got this middle of the conference of Stanford, Oregon State, Arizona, and Cal that we were hoping they would end up on the top of that heap. But we've already lost to Oregon State now in an outclassed fashion. We've got Arizona next week, who I think is going to be just as troublesome. Stanford is looking to be putting together all of the pieces, winning the line of scrimmage battle against most teams in the conference, and I think with how poorly the Bears are playing at the line, that's going to be devastating. And then that leaves Washington, who's probably number 7 in the Pac-10, leaving Cal at number 6, at least as things look right now. And it's just so darn frustrating, because I think this team should be better than that. I think they've got the talent to be better than that, and I just don't know why it's not coming together. And I think one of the things that makes it the most discouraging is the lack of competitiveness in these losses. I mean, one of the trademarks of the Tedford era has been every game has been at a minimum competitive. These multi-score losses have generally been few and far between, and not this year. We have 3 losses, all of which the Bears were effectively only able to put in 1 score, the only exception being the garbage time touchdown the Bears put up today, and all of them they lost by 3 or more scores. And that's just not like Cal at all. Generally speaking, they lose by 1 score, or if it's 2, it's because the opposition was able to extend at the last minute, that the game was in reach in the 4th quarter, but the Bears never got outclassed. And there was a certain frustration in that. There was the frustration of, why do we keep coming close and never getting over the hump? Well, I found something far more frustrating. I found how not even keeping it close and not even seeing the hump because it's way out on the horizon is far worse. And that's where we've been in these 3 losses this year. It's been disgustingly bad. And it doesn't much matter if the Bears can put up 40 to 50 points when they play the weak teams, when they're so thoroughly outclassed by the middle of the Pac-10 and above teams, that very razor-thin dividing line of going from completely outclassing the teams to being completely outclassed is not a very comforting line to be riding on. And I don't believe there's been a season in all of Tedford's reign where he was outclassed in 3 games. In fact, I doubt there was even a season where he was outclassed in 2. And 2 of those losses have come at home, which is additionally uncharacteristic. Most of the people listening haven't gone to these games on the road and seen how good they've played on the road to know what this team is capable of, to know how this team is capable of dealing with adversity. And they're just not doing a very good job of dealing with it at home. And I don't know how to explain that. And so it just leaves me all extremely frustrated. And so I'm going to give you my 5-point plan that if I was Tedford, what I would start doing to try to get this team back on track with a goal of looking forward to next season. Obviously, there's still things to be played for this season, so the 5 items will not be things that completely throw away this season, but they'll be building towards a future of tomorrow. Number 5. With the exception of Alualu and Sidquan Thompson, my older players are going to see less playing time for the rest of the season. The young kids are going to get more chances and more shots. The older guys are not getting it done on defense. Number 4, I'm going to work with Gregory to come up with a much more complicated set of zone schemes that I can substitute in and do so silently. Another little hitch I'm seeing here is all the talking and movement that's happening between the defenders is confusing them, and they're not ready for the play when it happens. They need to have a way to do these adjustments silently and quickly and be ready for the play when the ball is snapped. Number three, I'm going to start looking for a new offensive line coach. I'm sorry, this team has enough talent and big enough guys that the performance of this unit can be nothing less than a failure for Coach Marshall. He may have a mean and tough attitude himself, but it's not being instilled in his players, and he's not teaching technique well enough for them to be performing to the level they should be. Number two, I'm going to start looking for a new special teams coach. Now, those who know me know that I have never gotten on the Alomar bandwagon before now, but I'm just seeing consistent mediocrity and very little being done to address it, and I think it's time. And part of the way you're going to turn this team around is show that you're willing to make big changes and replacing your offensive line coach and replacing your special team coach shows that you're serious and you mean business. And finally, number one, Sweeney is going to get the first possession of the second quarter for the remainder of the season. It's time to get that kid some playing time. It's time to see if he's much of a gamer as everybody thinks. And Riley continues to show inconsistency well beyond his sell-by date for that type of inconsistency. He needs to be playing better in games like this. And sure, he may have a great game where he finishes it off against Arizona State, but it's time for him to start delivering in the big games, and that didn't happen today when it should have. And so I'm not saying that Riley should be replaced, but it's time for him to get some competitive heat, and it's time to see if Sweeney really deserves a shot at the starting position next year, and the only way that's going to happen is by giving him some playing time. So, first possession of the second quarter seems to always be a good time to do it, and that's when I would do it. So that's my 5-point plan of the changes I would be making moving forward. The final note for today's podcast is I really would like to send out my prayers and best wishes for Javid Best and his family. As much as I get very emotionally involved in the game, in the end, we have to remember that it's a game, and it really, I don't know, it affected me deeply to see him down on the field and motionless, and to know that he could be seriously injured, because I would never want that of a player of any team in the nation. And I'd like to send out a thank you to the Oregon State players and coaches for handling that situation very respectfully, to see them all down on their knees, wishing the best for Best. And from what I hear, it doesn't sound too horrible that he probably just had a concussion and was knocked out as part of that concussion. And so I wish Best all the best in health, do whatever it takes to get back to full health. The team will be waiting for you with open arms whenever that is, and I send my prayers and best wishes your way. And I'm sure everyone listening and throughout the Cal community feels the same way. And so I wanted to end with that. I wanted to end with, it's not something more positive, but maybe one of the better aspects of collegiate sports, that there's still a desire to see this as a pastime, as a sport, and that everybody wishes, in the end, the best for all of the players. So that's going to wrap up this edition of the podcast. There will be a BearTerritory.net podcast during the week with player interviews. I think Jason and I are going to be able to continue on our Excuse Me for My Voice podcast midweek, and of course another On the Road Home podcast after next week's game. So look forward to those, and thank you for listening. On the road again.